be with you, Mr. Chairman, again. I hope this is a quicker year than the last one and we can get things done. First, let me say I'm very disappointed. The president's budget, I thought maybe there would be some significant change that might cause us to have a bipartisan effort. There is little or no change at all in this budget. I'd like to make just a couple of observations about the president's comments and his performance in this budget. But first, I want to make an observation. The president has produced, in a period of 12 months, 9 budgets. Now, I haven't checked as to whether that's a record, but I would think it's pretty close to a record. He said in his State of the Union address to the people of the United States that we were going to make government smaller and that he was putting people first. The truth of the matter is, this is a budget that puts government first and does not reduce the size of government for about 3 years. In the first year, all of the appropriated accounts except defense go up. Our estimate is that it goes up 4.1%. The president's indicated also that he'd like to spend more on what we need. I'm quoting, more on what we need. Very interesting. I would conclude that we need everything that government is currently providing. We cannot find anything in the domestic side of this appropriation which has been significantly reduced, nor any significant program terminated. So I would conclude that everything is needed, according to the president, and that the only thing that can be cut is defense, and he does a good job there. This budget cuts defense $14 billion in budget authority over what had been programmed, according to our budget last year. Now, we can go through a lot of other details, but the truth of the matter is that this budget doesn't really change things very much. And in addition, a huge amount of this budget reduction is based upon the old idea of the high jumper who lowers the jump bar. I think the president found about $600 billion during the next 6 years from just economic changes, interest changes, and the like, which means if you couldn't jump the high bar, just reduce it a little bit, and then you can jump it. So while I look forward to working with the president, I repeat, I'm somewhat disappointed. I understand our leadership is going to go down there tomorrow and in this week and try to talk about perhaps getting a balanced budget. I hope we can get something done.
Well, it's appropriate, I think, looking at this budget, it fits in with March Madness. If this had been in the tournament, it had been knocked out in the first round. I think what we all need to understand, what all of you need to understand is, this is not about green eye shades and calculators. This is about ideas. Balancing the budget and lowering deficits is a vehicle to fundamental change in America. The simple fact of the matter is, unfortunately, the president puts off for the next generation, in the next century, the heavy lifting of being able to reduce the size and scope of government. Secondly, it's interesting that he does not provide any of the specifics of any of the programs that he thinks should be eliminated. And the reason he does that is because that's too politically tough to do it. The president loves government in Washington. He wants to keep it in Washington, and therefore he doesn't see fit to talk about any of the things that he thinks doesn't belong, as Senator Domenici said. Look, this administration is addicted to Washington spending, Washington taxes. This administration does not trust the American people. They simply do not have confidence that people across this country in the towns and villages, cities of our great country are capable of running their own lives. And that's essentially what Senator Domenici and I have tried to do in our balanced budget proposal. It's important to note, if I could, a lot of Americans don't understand that we actually wrote not only a balanced budget, but that vehicle transferred power and money and influence from Washington and tries to put it back into the hands of the American people who want their power back. We also, as you know, and the president vetoed that proposal. The president vetoed the Balanced Budget Act. He says he wants one, but he doesn't want one that represents serious change and one that takes power and money and influence out of this city. The president has vetoed twice the idea that we should fundamentally change the welfare program. We don't want to run welfare out of Washington anymore. We want to put it in our communities. We want to let people design a program that fits. No more one-size-fits-all philosophy. Twice he vetoed welfare reform because he's addicted to Washington bureaucrats. We also have a Medicare plan that the president vetoed because we wanted to break the iron fist of the Health Care Financing Administration and let our senior citizens across this country have choice. You see, the bottom line for the Republicans here on Capitol Hill is that we essentially want to take power and money and influence from this city. We want to deny more programs and more power to Washington bureaucrats, and we trust the American people to run welfare, to educate their children, to take care of the handicapped and the poor. And at the same time, we believe that Americans ought to get a little bit of their money back. The president actually increases the tax on capital gains. Now, as it says in his proposal, the economy is only going to grow at 2.3%. We're all very worried about slow growth in this economy. Well, if you're going to raise the cost of investment, then you're going to have slow growth. There is a candidate out there that's talked about stagnating wages. He's talked about the loss of jobs. He's got the wrong solution. The right solution? We need to have more savings in America. We need to have more investment, higher productivity, and more growth. Without it, we can't be successful. What we want to do is we want to get power, money, and influence out of this city. He wants to keep it here. We want to downsize government. And frankly, as the American people learn about our plans, they will support them in vast numbers.
Okay, we got a couple minutes.
Congressman Kasich, on the capital gains tax cut, the president seemed to try and come down on the side of family tax credits and middle-class families and against the capital gains tax cut. How are the Republicans going to respond to that without looking like they're trying to play the business card?
First of all, he's not against the capital gains tax cut. He's for a capital gains increase. He is proposing a tax increase in his budget. He is changing the rules as they apply to people who take risks in creating jobs. That is a horrible mistake. America has the highest tax on capital investment in the modernized world. I was at the UPS, United Parcel Service, yesterday. And when you go into UPS, you think it's just a bunch of people loading a bunch of packages in a truck. You see, it's computer-driven. They actually, Pete, have out there a computer-operated system that sorts the packages. Now, how do you get that? From investment. You want to encourage investment. You want to encourage savings. You want to encourage higher productivity is exactly what was going on in that UPS plant. The president's plan would put the UPS plant back to the 19th century. We need to move into the 21st century. And secondly, the president isn't as generous as we are towards children in America. We're giving families a $500 tax credit. We think it makes sense, and it takes some of the savings from eliminating bureaucracy in this town and gives it to people. And that's what people want in this country. Senator Manchin.
Well, let me just say, I don't think the Republicans have to apologize for trying to create a capital gains differential. I mean, the overwhelming number of experts in the United States on the side of capital gains differential will increase jobs and make a better future for the American people is astounding. A few years ago, it was perhaps even. Now it's overwhelming that since most of our competitors do not tax capital gains the way we do, and since we save so little, that part of this changing economic environment, part of that change and to help our working people have more confidence, is to get more investment, more savings, better, and more jobs. So we're not embarrassed to talk about capital gains. He doesn't have it in, we'll have it in any tax package that we send to the president.
Both parties are addicted to corporate welfare. Can't the Republicans take the lead and clean this mess up?
Well, look, the president's got...
What are you doing about corporate welfare?
Well, maybe we can let John talk about it.
Boy, am I glad you asked that question.
He's a corporate welfare guy.
Have you been in? Have you been out of the country or the last? Look, we laid out $30 billion in closing loopholes for large corporations in America that we think were unnecessary provisions in the tax code. We see capital gains reductions, incentives for investment as positive. But we don't believe in welfare, either in the tax code or on the spending side. In fact, the president's addicted to more corporate welfare because he wants to continue the advanced technology program. Do you all know what that is? That's a program where we pass out money to large corporations so they can do research. Now, this lady I saw this morning who was cleaning an exercise bike in a gymnasium in Columbus, Ohio, she doesn't want her tax dollars to go to some large multinational corporation to do research. We want to zero out the Commerce Department in that provision. And in terms of closing loopholes, it's amazing, isn't it, that the Republicans have made more progress on closing corporate loopholes in 1 year than all the Democrat Congresses in the last 40. They talk out of both sides of their mouth. They say, oh, we don't like all these profits and all these big corporations, and they worship at the altar of multinational giveaways. We stepped up to the plate. We made changes. I'm proud of that.